morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 13th of May, Mondays at 9, all things political. And Stephen Toma is our guest this hour, senior White House correspondent and government and politics editor for McClatchy Newspapers, where he oversees coverage of the White House, Congress, and economics. And he's covered Washington for a long time, since 1987, has won a number of awards for his work. We have a lot to talk about today. What's been dominating the news, at least over the weekend, is the IRS targeting conservative political groups, and a great deal being said about Benghazi. Word today is that depositions will examine Hillary Clinton's role in Benghazi. Are there legitimate concerns here, or is this an attempt to undermine her, because indications are, according to Nate Silver, who was pretty much on the money during the last presidential election, that it looks very good for her to be the nominee in 2016. We will talk about those issues. A big story over the weekend, I don't know if you saw the Saturday Times, New York Times article, but it's a very big story concerning global warming. Heat-trapping gas, carbon dioxide, has now passed a milestone that has been feared for a long time. It's at a concentration not seen on Earth for millions of years. We'll ask if there will be any congressional response to that or presidential response to that this week, and what's being considered in terms of legislation to deal with that. Here is our phone number. Not just the phone number, but all ways to reach us this morning. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we'd like to hear from you any way you'd like to get a hold of us. Stephen Toma, thank you very much for being with us. Good morning.
Good morning. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, great to have you here. Let's start with the IRS, which I think has become even a bigger story than the Benghazi story over the past couple days. The IRS apologizing for inappropriate targeting of some 300 groups, conservative groups in this country. What are the big concerns here other than, you know, an obvious impingement on freedom?
First, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Kathleen. This is potentially much bigger than the Benghazi story. Everything's potential because we don't know where either story ends up.
Mm-hmm.
But at a minimum, the IRS story is a political scandal within the IRS that some group of appointees thought that this was okay to do, to target a group of political group, rather, for their ideology. And it's clearly one-sided. There's no reports yet that they were targeting all political groups, all politically active groups, just one side. That by itself is a scandal that we haven't seen in a generation in Washington. And then there are the questions that are yet unanswered and may take weeks or months to find out. Who else did they target? Who encouraged them to do this? Who else knew about it? How high up did it go? And there will be an instant thing, particularly in the media and Washington and cable TV, to immediately question the role of the White House, and that's an inevitable question. But the fact is, it's a scandal, even if it only happened in the IRS.
Mm-hmm. The word so far is that it was some low-level employee. Is it more than that? What are you hearing?
Well, how do you define low-level? If someone has the power to target people for tax scrutiny, I personally, as a taxpayer, I would find that pretty high-level to me if they were targeting me. Any low level is lower than that. There are very few political appointees in the IRS. Over the years, particularly since the Nixon scandals where they used the IRS to go after their enemies, they've tried to isolate it more and more from partisan politics. Having said that, the commissioner who was the commissioner at the time, who was a Bush appointee, doesn't mean he's Republican, we just know he was a George W. Bush appointee, apparently knew about it or definitely testified to Congress that it wasn't happening at the time it was happening. These are things that have yet to be cleared up.
Mm-hmm. Do we know who discovered this, when this was discovered? I've heard that conservative commentators have been on this story for some time.
Well, I mean, I was listening to radio this morning, and one very active conservative talk show host, Mark Levin, was saying his group, which is a legal group, had played a role in it. What we know is this, that the IRS admitted it. Put out a statement on Friday and that there's an Inspector General report coming this week. So clearly they put out the statement Friday in anticipation it was going to be made public within a couple of days.
What other White Houses have been accused, and rightfully so, of targeting political, quote, enemies?
With the IRS, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they all target their enemies in one way or another. The Nixon White House, I mean, that's the one we know about, and it was one of the main reasons for the articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon. In that case, the articles of impeachment, because the White House and the president played a role in it. It wasn't just because the IRS was doing it. They actually directed the IRS to go after their enemies.
Mm-hmm. Does the White House normally have, I mean, what kind of oversight do they have of the IRS?
Well, apparently it's very hands-off, and, you know, the IRS is part of the Treasury Department. The Secretary of Treasury, of course, is a presidential appointee. But what we're led to believe so far is that it's very disinterested. There is no involvement from the political appointees to the IRS functionaries.
So this week, will there be more hearings on this issue, or are they coming up in the weeks ahead?
Well, there's no hearings at all yet. I mean, the Inspector General report is independent of a congressional hearing. There will no doubt be congressional hearings. I would think, unlike Benghazi, there will be a bipartisan call today and tomorrow, members of both parties, for a very extensive congressional review, which will not just look at this, but as I said, we'll look at who were these people in the IRS who were doing this? Who else were they looking at? What empowered them to do this? Should that be changed? And did anyone outside the IRS know about it, at the Treasury Department or beyond?
Mm-hmm.
And it may take a week, it may take a month to set up those hearings. I would assume the White House, in this case, will also support a congressional investigation.
Has the president said anything about this and I just missed it, Stephen?
No. No, it came up Friday. The White House press secretary kind of passed the buck, said it's kind of the IRS. We don't know anything about it. The IRS is independent. It's up to them. The president is having a press conference, though, in an hour and 4 minutes. Or an hour and 19 minutes with the British Prime Minister David Cameron. They usually take two questions from each country's press corps. We call it two and two. And I assume that one of the two questions from the American press will be on the texting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine that it would be. You mentioned David Cameron. I was listening to some of what he said in an interview this morning on the way into work. He was talking quite a bit about Syria. It would appear from what he said that they are much more heavily involved in supporting the rebel groups in opposition to Assad than the United States is. Am I reading that right?
They are. And it's interesting. On a normal week, you'd expect Syria to be the dominant subject, at least from our point of view, when the two of them come out to face the press. I mean, Britain is an ally. Britain is involved. Britain is also has some views on whether the red line was crossed or not. But I think with IRS and the Benghazi news of late last week, that'll dominate the U.S. questions of the president.
Mm-hmm. So you believe the IRS story will be bigger than Benghazi, and yet the hearings keep continuing over Benghazi, which does lead one to believe, is there really something big here, or is it just happenstance that Hillary Clinton, Nate Silver says, and he seems to be pretty good with his analysis, she looks good for the 2016 nomination. Now that we are hearing today that her role in all of this will be, depositions will be examining her role.
Kathleen, I think this Benghazi story works at three key questions. One is, were there failures of security in protecting American diplomats? Did they ignore the warnings in advance? That's kind of settled now. Obviously, there were failed security. There was a successful attack that killed four Americans.
Yes.
The second question is, was it possible to have done things in real time the night of the attack? I think that's been pretty much answered. There's some debate from the right, but pretty much answered that. Reality is, no, they couldn't get U.S. troops or air power in an adequate amount of time. So now the remaining question is, how did the administration talk about it after the fact? And that goes to the question of whether the talking points were manipulated, whether there was an attempt to protect the State Department, i.e. the Secretary of State, from political criticism, whether there was a jurisdictional fight between state and CIA, you know, who's going to take the blame on this,
mm-hmm.
and whether the White House was playing a role try to protect the president in the heat of a campaign in which he was saying there was no more terrorist threat because he'd been doing such a good job. So I think that's the remaining debate, is that over the talking points. And what we're getting now is just when people think things were really settled and done one way or another, we get a few more reports last week. Jonathan Carl of ABC, Stephen Hayes of the Weekly Standard started revealing more details. None of them by themselves have turned up an entire new storyline, but they keep adding more details, and those details are different from what the government has been telling us. They're different, for example, from what the White House has been telling us. Each one by itself is not a scandal, but they add more detail, and they should raise questions to the press that we want to know more. Maybe we don't know it all. You talked about Hillary Clinton. That's another element. That's the political element. There's no doubt there's a political element about that. You know, just the fact that there's this video of her at the one congressional hearing she spoke at, saying, what difference does it make at this point? And Republicans are using that already in ads. I think it would probably become the number one ad of the 2016 campaign should she run for the Democratic nomination. She'll probably be called back to testify. One of the interesting developments yesterday was Ambassador Pickering, who led the internal State Department review, talked about the fact that they didn't really interrogate or question Secretary Clinton. She did talk to the Senate committee. And I think the House is going to want to talk to her. It's not done yet.
Mm-hmm. But Pickering also said the decisions about the consulate were made well below her level.
Right. And he didn't address her. His charge was to address the questions of security. As I said, the questions, I call them questions one and two.
Mm-hmm.
Did they handle security before the attack properly? And Pickering's review said no, they did not. They need to change several things systemically within the State Department. And secondly, could they have done anything in real time? And he and Admiral Mullen, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said that no, they really couldn't have done anything. You know, people talk about, well, it's only an hour flight time from Aviano Air Force Base in Italy. It's an hour flight time, but that assumes that they're on the tarmac ready to go, and they have the airspace cleared, and they have a target, and they know exactly where they're going. And none of that was true. Everyone in the military says now it would have taken 9 hours or more to get someone there.
Right. Well, what about people like Senator Inhofe of Oklahoma saying the president could be impeached over the White House cover-up?
I thought that was a bit of political hyperbole. He also said that it was the worst scandal in American history, or the worst cover-up, worse than Iran-Contra and Watergate and,
right,
and all those put together. If he said it was, I don't know how he knows that yet. And if that were given that kind of conclusion, there's probably no need to have an investigation. He just goes straight to the impeachment hearings now. But obviously they don't know that. And we can't say for certain where this leads. We can't say that with anything until we ask all the questions and get all the answers. You know, that's our job, reporters.
Right.
You know, we're never satisfied. We always think there are more questions. But right now, I don't think it's leaning in that direction.
Hmm. You're going to be on that story for a long time, I would think, though, don't you?
I think so. I mean, they don't tell the truth as readily or as widely as we in the press corps would like.
Right.
You know,
right.
I'd like them to stand up and take 70 to 100 questions. They don't do that.
Right.
And I'd like to have more opportunities to ask.
One more question for me, and then we'll go to our phone lines. They're already crowded. The story in the Times on Saturday, which was really striking to me, the headline is "Heat-Trapping Gas Passes Milestone, Raising Fears That the CO2 Level in the Atmosphere, the Heat-Trapping Gas, Is at a Level Not Seen in Millions, Millions, I Repeat, of Years, Portending Major Climate Changes." Is anybody concerned about this issue? Are they going to be discussing this issue? Isn't this a big thing?
Is who going to be discussing? Washington? Congress?
Yes, I mean, right.
I don't think so. You know, the president has said that climate change legislation is among his priorities for the second term. His proposal in the first term did not succeed. The reality is he's not really pushing it in the second term. He's pushing immigration reform, and now he's been overtaken by events he did not foresee on Inauguration Day, including Benghazi and Syria and the Red Line. And, I'm sorry, Benghazi. But, and Newtown and things like that. his agenda is kind of being taken over by other events. I don't see any push for climate legislation in Congress. Hmm.
Two phone calls momentarily. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our lines are crowded, so we don't want you to be frustrated. If you'd like to reach us, please send a message. You can do that at WPR.org. Stephen Toma, senior White House correspondent and the government and politics editor for McClatchy Newspapers, is our guest this hour. Been covering Washington since 1987. To your phone calls momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are so pleased to tell you that Maya Angelou will be with us for a good portion of the second hour of the program. Her latest book is Mom and Me and Mom, and it highlights her relationship with her quite remarkable, somewhat eccentric, and terribly good-hearted mother, Vivian Baxter. Maya, as you probably know, lived with her grandmother from the ages of 3 to 13 and went to visit, to live with her mother when she was 13 years old. And I think it's safe to say her mother always was there for her thereafter, and she grew to like her mother. And it's quite a story. And Maya's a wonderful guest, so she will be with us for most of the 10 o'clock hour. All right, let's go to phone calls. Tom in Mequon, our first caller for you, Stephen. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Kathleen, an interesting guest. I'm hoping you're going to allow me a moment to... I have 2 points to make. The first is, if it's true that that the IRS was just focusing on the right wing, that's probably not a good thing. But I would also like to know is if in their searches, if they've actually found illegal activity or not to following the rules. I noticed, especially during the time of elections, there's these shadow right-wing groups that put up ads on the newspapers and TVs and stuff, and there's many more slanderous lies and deceitful, and I'm wondering if the IRS has actually found some things that are not right. They should bring that out now and show that it's that there has been some problems.
I'm sorry, Tom. What groups are these you're talking about? They put up ads where? What do they say?
On media. Well, they'll talk badly about a Democratic candidate or a liberal candidate, and many times they actually say lies, deceitful things, wrong things. They're just not true about the candidates. If there has actually been problems that have come up with that, I'd like the IRS to actually tell us that.
Stephen.
I'm not a tax expert, but I don't think the IRS has anything to say about whether people tell lies in political ads. I don't think the truthfulness of ads is a question for the IRS or the tax status. I think the only lies the IRS is concerned about is whether you lie on the tax form about how much money you have. I think that would be outside their purview, but I don't know that for sure.
Thanks, Tom, very much for the call. I wonder how much this whole issue will resonate with the American public, because it's hard to believe that a lot of people in America really like the IRS.
I think it'll resonate a lot.
Do you?
I just think there are agencies of the government that are not only supposed to be, but probably are, widely respected, above reproach, the IRS, the FBI, certain places that are supposed to have zero politics. Yeah, people may not like the IRS, but I don't think people think they're politically motivated. We just haven't seen that in a generation. I think it's very, very damaging, and people will be upset about it.
Mm-hmm. John in La Crosse, hi.
Hi, thank you. During the time Bush was president, many, many, many times, almost daily, I would hear some problem in the government. And the news people would always follow the news with a comment saying that this is something to do with the Bush administration. They use that term Bush administration many, many, many times. I don't believe I have ever heard an explanation of a problem such as these two we have now with the Benghazi and the IRS ever explained as being part of the Obama administration. Second, I'd like to just mention that we've heard over and over and over also the derision of the Fox network. In this case, I think the Benghazi revelation is largely due to the good media that the Fox network provided. Comment.
Okay. Take the second one first. Fox has broken a few stories, but the summation that they've broken most of them, that's just wrong. I'll point to you, to McClatchy newspapers, colleagues of mine, who within weeks after the attack pointed out a lot of factual errors in the government account, the Obama administration account, that there actually had been no spontaneous demonstration. We revealed that, not Fox News. A lot of mainstream news organizations in those first weeks revealed things. So that storyline that Fox puts out, that they're the only ones, that's just not true. The second thing is the notion that people haven't used the term Obama administration on the tax story. The tax story is 36 hours old, and it is so far limited to one agency, not to the administration. We use the term Obama administration when you're talking about more than one office. Now I will read you our McClatchy story from Friday on Benghazi talking points and the fact the White House was under great scrutiny. The lead is the Obama administration insisted Friday. I think that's also just wrong. I mean, people have attributed the entire Benghazi debate internally to the Obama administration repeatedly, probably hundreds, if not thousands of times.
Mm-hmm. How many hearings have we already had on Benghazi, Stephen?
I don't know. Not 10. I mean, it's not that
really?
Many. Well, the Senate Intelligence Committee, chaired by Dianne Feinstein, had few. Maybe it was 3 or 5. I didn't go to them, so I don't remember exactly how many. And the House has had a few. Darrell Issa's Government Oversight Committee has had a few. It's not that many.
Thanks, John, for the call. Jim in Milwaukee. Our number, by the way, is 800-486-8655. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Just as an aside, I expect that from the House of Representatives that we'll continue to see this bleep on the wall approach to the president's programs and just about anything. But I'd like to talk today more about the domestic terrorism in terms of what is inflicted by weak use of the regulatory agencies, and to suggest that people do a little digging on the net about the Texas fertilizer explosion in terms of putting in keywords like violation of laws and the Christian Science Monitor and look this up in more detail. And there also was the general trend that they're trying to put it out from Texas is to have happy talk. And there was an article a couple weeks ago in the Nation section of the Chicago Tribune, Generosity Boys, Texas Town After Fertilizer Blast. And it talks about people from Texas sending in food and stuff from other towns to help the people of West Texas, which in itself is nice, but doesn't really hit the real issue. And so the tendency in Texas is to cover this up and to use happy talk. So seldom is heard a discouraging word or a lullaby of Lady Birdland, and can't we just all put this behind us? But the reality of the matter is that no matter how much Texans pitch in to help each other, the real issue is what happened and the domestic genocide that's imposed by the poor regulations that continuously go on.
Stephen.
Setting aside, I mean, phrases like genocide, I know that they are investigating. I know the media, including the great Ford War Star Telegram, one of the McClatchy papers, are spending a fair amount of time looking at the regulation of fertilizer and the fertilizer industry and manufacturing, a state regulation as well as federal regulation. I know we're looking.
Thanks, Jim, very much for your call. Hugh in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi. Earlier, a Democrat called and complained about the lies of the right wing. Well, the biggest liars in Benghazi are, of course, Hillary and Obama. They blamed it several times on the filmmaker and the video. And it's one thing the hearings are coming out with is that the video had nothing to do with the killing of our ambassador and the others in Benghazi. This is a terrorist attack on 9/11. And the Democrats were assuring us that there is no more terrorism. Al-Qaeda is over. even in Egypt, when they were attacking the embassy, people were shouting, "We're all Obamas now. We're all Osama now." The trouble is, and by the way, the IRS apparently is not only attacking the right wing, but they're attacking some pro-Israeli groups, too, for special scrutiny. This is an Islamist administration. Hillary and Barack Hussein Obama feared the Arab Spring. Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood, is persecuting Christians in Egypt. And Morsi demanded that the video maker be jailed and the feds under Obama go and get him in the middle of the night. This is a Gestapo type thing to please the Islamists. They lied continually to the UN, to the American people, about the video causing these deaths.
Stephen.
Well, that was a pretty ad hominem attack, and I'll just set that aside. I said earlier, I think the Benghazi story now is focused on the third and main question remaining, which is the development of the talking points and how the government explained and what it said about the attack.
Thanks you very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. You know, it is, there is some valid criticism that we are so much on this story, and indeed it could be, as some have suggested, that nobody knew exactly what was going on and that there probably was some kind of turf war between the CIA and the State Department and all of this. And yes, they did not have this place adequately protected, and they did not respond to Ambassador Stevens asking for more protection. But isn't there a danger in holding steadfast to these hearings over and over and over when we've got Syria on our hands and we have a number of other issues like global warming? We've mentioned a few of them. Are we dealing with this issue at the expense of others?
I think the media and the Congress, which are the two that ask most of the questions right now about Libya, are capable of asking questions about multiple things at the same time.
Yes.
I think we can do Syria. We can do Benghazi. We can look at the IRS. We can look at the global warming and climate change legislation. I think we can do all of it at the same time. We're a little shorter staffed on the media side than we used to be, economic forces being what they are, but I think we're still capable of doing it.
Let's go to Rick in Elkhart Lake. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
With the Benghazi investigation, four Americans were killed, and I think it should be investigated. It's just that I find it hard to take the people in Washington seriously when there's such an overemphasis, I don't know if it's overemphasis, but such an emphasis on this Benghazi flare-up or whatever you call it. But anyway, there's nothing that I see about investigating the Iraq War. We have Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld getting into a war under false pretenses. Where is the outrage, the investigation, the calling to task and to truth our leaders at that time? If I saw that going on, I could more take this Benghazi investigation more seriously than, for the most part, political theater.
Stephen.
Well, thanks for the question or the comment. I'll point out two things. One, again, to brag about my own company, not me, but colleagues at McClatchy are the reporters who consistently reported in 2001, 2002, and in 2003 skepticism about the claim that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. I think they've been widely credited, praised. They've won awards for that coverage. They were the only news organization that was persistently critical, skeptical of those claims. The notion that the run-up to the Iraq War was not investigated, I find hard to believe. I mean, dozens and dozens of investigations by the government, independent reports, congressional hearings, years of hearings. So maybe I'm missing something there, a disconnect in the question, but I think that's been overwhelmingly investigated and reported.
I want to switch to a whole new topic for a moment before our listeners take us back to Benghazi and the IRS. I was reading an article yesterday, which I found interesting. We did one show on this a couple of months ago, Stephen, and I believe that the administration and the country needs more information on health care reform. A recent poll showing 40% of Americans don't even know it's a law on the books, obviously not aware of what will be implemented, when it will be implemented, how we'll all have to understand the implementation. And we don't seem to be getting a whole lot of guidance on this. Isn't that amazing? 40% don't even know it's a law?
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. You know, I think part of that's because of the slow rollout. It's taking effect over 3 or 4 years in pieces, not all at once. Some of it may even be by design. Maybe the authors thought this is going to take a little while to get used to. Interesting now that the government, the White House, is trying to have public events to call attention to it because they would like a little more political credit for it. They had an event Friday. It got overwhelmed by questions about Benghazi, but they would like to get their poll numbers are not that good either in the recognition of the new law or support or approval of it. The biggest parts of it take effect at the end of this year. So it's got a little more time to take effect.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the administration needs to give us a little bit more guidance on what to anticipate?
The administration and the news media. I mean, there are people in the news media that are doing a very good job. There are a lot of unanswered things. If you talk to people in the healthcare industry, talk to your own doctor. They're tuning in. Hospitals are tuning in because they're having to make changes in how they manage things. Not all of it is clear how it's going to work or how much it's going to cost. There's a reporter at the Associated Press, Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar, has run some wonderful reporting on the unknown and maybe unintended consequences of some costs are going up that they didn't anticipate or talk about. There's some good reporting going on, but there should be more of it.
Yeah. Well, I guess the other question that you must ask is how in the world could 40% of the American public not even know it's a law? What's everybody doing?
Well, it's only one poll, too, Kathleen.
So you don't believe it?
I haven't read that poll, but I've read a lot of polls about what people think of the law. And there, it's usually about 45 to 45 in favor or opposed, with about 10% undecided. The undecided would suggest that the number is smaller of people who are unaware. To me, the more important question about public sentiment is that there's not more support. I mean, they're clearly divided over.
Mm-hmm. Kumar is next in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I have a concern regarding all this report being based on single person conversion.
Kumar, we can't hear you very well. Can you get a little closer to the phone, or you're just
Hi.
There you go.
I have a little concern about all these reports being based on single person versions, starting from Iraq War and now Benghazi. The whole thing is that I feel that there is a concerted effort going on to discredit the Obama administration. So they're trying to find instances where they can say that this presidential legacy is tarnished.
All right, Stephen.
There's no doubt. I couldn't quite hear the beginning of the question, but the notion that there's an effort to discredit the Obama administration and to tarnish his legacy. There's no doubt that's part of what the Republican Party wants to do. You see it all the time. I mean, you see it in. I should say this. I mean, I think congressional oversight investigations on things like the Libya attack are exactly what Congress oversight committees do. They take on more of a partisan air when members of that party leap to conclusions before the hearings are done or say things like we're getting ready for impeachment before there's any evidence that the president participated in anything nefarious. Oversight's a legitimate thing, but there's no doubt the Republican Party is trying to discredit the president.
Yeah. More phone calls in a moment. You're listening to All Things Political for this Monday, the 13th of May. Stephen Toma is our guest. Stephen, senior White House correspondent and the government and politics editor for McClatchy Newspapers, overseeing coverage of the White House, Congress, and economics. And he's done the coverage of Washington for a number of years, since 1987. Kumar, thanks for your calls. Our lines have been very busy. May I remind you that you can also leave messages for us by writing to WPR.org, and we'll read what your thoughts are and your questions are for Stephen that way as well. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program for most of the hour. Maya Angelou will be our guest. She has a new book, which she said she's been thinking about writing this for the past 25 to 30 years, but couldn't write it until now. Mom and Me and Mom. That's most of hour two. Back to phone calls for Stephen Toma from McClatchy, and let's go next to Matt in Menominee. Hi, Matt.
Morning, guys. I was going to say, Stephen, I just, you know that if a Republican was the president or was the administration, you know that they would definitely just, the media would not let up at all. They would just crucify him if they had the chance. And then my second point was, you know, I hear the term climate change or global warming, which drives me nuts because we got 16 inches of snow in Ellsworth on May 2nd. I got a video of snowing in Prairie Farm on Saturday. And I know that the thing I always hear is like, oh, it's just weather. But I know that the first day it's over 100 degrees. We're going to be talking about climate change and global warming and how we need to, like, you know, like stop all gasoline engines immediately.
But and Matt,
my second point is
let's go back to your first point for a moment. You can't.
In the '70s, we talked about it freezing to death. Like
Matt,
there was a global cooling, yeah. And I submit the argument that it goes in cycles. So.
Matt, you can't ignore the story that came out this week that the heat trapping gas in the atmosphere, carbon dioxide, has passed a milestone. And the concentration is such that it has not been seen on this earth for millions of years. I mean, it's more complicated.
Millions, right, because we were keeping track of climate. Millions.
All right, Matt. Thank you very much for your call. I think this is one of these issues that it's really hard to debate this at this point. And we are going to talk about this issue tomorrow at 9. But the fact that it's happening is, you know, beyond discussion, I think. It's happening. Thank you, Matt, for the call. Let's go to Darren in Viroqua. Hi, Darren.
Hi. As a nurse, I'm a good observer of people, and I'm seeing that there's a heightened level of rhetoric and passion when discussing issues, such as Hugh is, for instance, a frequent caller, and it's often ad hominem attack with focuses on Barack Hussein Obama, mm-hmm. and making comments about Gestapo and being a Muslim administration. And then that particular caller referenced the first caller as a Democrat. Well, I don't think we should make labels of people. The first caller never labeled himself a Democrat. And then going back to the first caller to point out the heated rhetoric, he made a comment that the IRS targeting, as he put it, right-wing groups is kind of not right. Well, it's not kind of not right. It's not right. The IRS has in the past targeted various groups, but we have not seen this really since the Nixon administration, perhaps, and it is not kind of not right. And so, and he was talking about they funding ads, and Kathleen, I think you pointed it out, who are they, and who are they funding ads against, and what are these lies, and that caller and then the caller you just had never answered questions. It's like they're reading a script. They're so passionate about their rhetoric that they cannot engage in genuine dialogue. And I think that's reflective of our overall political culture, and we see it in the Congress with Senator Johnson even admitting to Senator Kerry, no, I was not at the hearing where they showed the tapes about Benghazi.
All right, thanks for the call. This is an important issue, I think, for you to address, Stephen, because there is a good measure of this in American society now, isn't there? There isn't a whole lot of respect here. There isn't an understanding of basic facts about certain things. There's very little civility. I have noticed it. You must have noticed it. You've been doing Washington covering these issues for a long time.
There's no doubt. I mean, there's no doubt. I think one of the biggest changes in the political debate and political conversation is there's no arbiter. There's no neutral arbiter that anyone trusts.
Right.
used to be the media. It used to be Walter Cronkite, the CBS Evening News. Now, most of the media that, you know, that tries to play it down the middle is dismissed as partisan, even if they're trying not to be. People find their own source of news that tends to reflect back at them the angle they like. Not all, but a good percent. The kind of people who call into this show are pretty well informed. A lot of people who don't call into the show, the kind of people you talk to in a corner bar, are probably going to be, if they get any news at all, are going to get it from cable news.
Right. So what do we do about that?
I think we still keep speaking to the people who, I think it's the majority of people still actually want to find out things. I just because we hear from a percentage of people, and they've made up their mind, and it doesn't matter what the facts are. I think the majority of people want to know what's going on. They tune into news shows like this, or they read a newspaper, or God love them, or a website, or the radio. Well, I think the majority of people are still pretty open minded and want to know what's going on.
All right. Glad to hear that. Darren, thanks for your call. Pat in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I just want to comment on the NPR radio, how great it is that both sides can say their piece and, expose their level of thoughtfulness of these issues. So, I've heard more talk since that I wanted to comment. Just one thing, a real simple thing, is that Bush era had 51 attacks on U.S. embassies. And I don't remember 51, grilling, congressional hearings about it. And there was like 17 or 18 deaths in those 51 attacks on embassies. So this is the first one I think I've heard of in the Obama administration. And, there isn't an inequality of, well, if the inequality is, why didn't we investigate the 51 attacks on the U.S. embassies during the Bush administration?
Stephen.
I don't know that we did not investigate attacks on the embassy. There was one thing, I was talking to a Foreign Service member, was not stationed in Libya, but pointed out that there are requests probably weekly from stations around the world, consulates and embassies, asking for more or better security. Now, not all of them are in a high-profile place like Libya, where we just participated in the overthrow of the government. But there are a few security officers attached to an embassy who don't want more security. These things are reviewed at some level in the State Department. If you believe Darrell Issa, you believe that Hillary Clinton signed off on every one. If you believe the Democrats, it happened at a lower level. But those requests come in all the time because there are security concerns. The U.S. flag is, unfortunately, a magnet for a lot of bad stuff around the world.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Pat, for the call. Kevin, Milwaukee, hi.
Oh, hi. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. I was going to also try to put Hugh to task, like your previous caller did. I get a little upset when he calls in because let me jump to what I really, what's really more important even than that is that I heard one time on public radio, and I don't remember if it was like Fresh Air or some other show like that, but there was a guy interviewed right around that Benghazi episode where he said a friend of his was a reporter in Libya while that was happening and who actually went up to one of the terrorists and said, well, why are you doing this? And the terrorist just kind of shrugged and said, well, that movie in California. And then the guy says, did you see the movie in California? The guy says, no. And then this is how it was described. And he also said that there's these groups over there who are ready to go with some operation like that at a moment's notice. So we can characterize it as terrorism, and it can appear that this was all set up and planned ahead of time, but he was putting everything in perspective. Now, I didn't write down any names, of course. I was driving my truck at work, and I don't remember who said this or what show it was on, but I don't know why it's so unfeasible that this could have been misconstrued as something like that, and it just seems so transparent that they're making such a over-politicized spin on it like that. And the whole thing about that, you know, Hugh calling in with his rhetoric, it seemed like he kind of gets brushed off and, you know, kind of dismissively cast aside as like, well, you know, I think it would be helpful for everybody to take his rhetoric piece by piece and go through it and explain why this is damaging to our the whole world and the situation that we're in.
All right, Kevin, thank you. I think Kevin's point is a good one, that at the moment, when something like this happens, be it in Benghazi or wherever in the world, it may be hard to sort out what exactly has happened.
On the caller's point about the role of the movie, whether one person in the crowd outside the Benghazi facility commented on the movie or not, it is a settled fact now that this was a planned attack on the U.S. facility there. This was not a spontaneous demonstration inspired by a movie.
Right.
That's what people said, that Susan Rice leaned toward on those five Sunday talk shows. But we now know that. We know, and the government knew it in real time, that was not what happened in Benghazi. May have been what happened in Cairo, but not what happened in Benghazi.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kevin, very much for the call. Mike in Madison, hi.
Hi. Sometime I heard ago that Congress had been considering a carbon tax to address global warming. When was that, and who was behind it? And it's needed now more than ever, as we're seeing CO2 and the rise to 400 levels and 30% more acidic oceans, which are devastating some fisheries already. And the money that gets collected from a carbon tax, you go back to the public in the form of positive incentives for people to drive less, fly less, and use less fossil fuel-derived energy in their homes. This kind of approach was needed 10 years ago, not now, but it's still needed.
Stephen, is it being discussed anywhere? I know there are people who are talking about it, but is anybody putting that into any form of legislation?
No. Two things. One, in 1993, 20 years ago, Bill Clinton proposed what then was called a BTU tax, which would tax energy, fossil fuels, based on the amount of BTUs they produced. So oil and natural gas would be taxed. It was passed in one body and not the other. I think it was passed in the House but not the Senate. And it was the Senate Democrats who pulled the rug out in the House. I remember at the time said, we're never going first again, because it was a very politically dangerous move. And the Senate pulled the rug out from under them, and it died. At the beginning of the Obama administration, 20 years later, or 16 years later, he started talking about efforts, not a carbon tax directly. No, there's no legislation. It's being discussed. It's discussed by environmental groups, by some energy people. It's discussed in academic circles, but there is no proposal in Congress, nor will there be.
Thanks, Mike, for the call. Steve in La Crosse, probably our last caller this hour. Hi, Steve.
Hi. My question has to do with the story about the IRS investigations.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we're short of time, but it's kind of two parts. First is there any evidence that political pressure was brought to bear to make these things happen, obviously from the left? And the second part is it possible that it's primarily right-leaning organizations that are skating on the edges of the law in terms of being tax-exempt or whatever, and that left-leaning organizations just aren't doing that to the same degree?
Stephen?
No, there's no evidence of political pressure yet. We're only a day and a half really into the story, really half a day if you don't count the weekend, so we don't know. But I said that's among the major questions are, did the people in the office, which is in Cincinnati, the IRS office who handles this, act on their own? Did anyone else in the IRS know about it in Washington? Did anyone else at the Treasury Department know about it? And ultimately, did anyone in the White House or anywhere else know about it? All questions, no answers.
Mm-hmm. We will find out. So there's a press conference pretty soon now with David Cameron.
Yeah.
Are you going to be there?
No, I would have had to have walked out on you 40 minutes ago.
Oh, Stephen.
Thank you, Stephen. One of my partners, Leslie Clark, is already in the chair.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure to have you here. Stephen Toma, our guest this hour. And as expected, I guess we spent a whole lot of time on Benghazi and the IRS. But there will be more on both those topics as the week goes on. We will branch into other areas of discussion. Stephen Toma is the senior White House correspondent and the government and politics editor for McClatchy Newspapers, overseeing coverage of the White House, Congress, and economics. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We welcome a new producer to this program who will work with Rhonda, KP Whaley, and he'll be doing on-air production pretty soon. So welcome, KP, who's moved here from Vermont, although he has Midwestern ties. More conversation after the news.